Cat Disgusted is a show about veterinary nursing. It is not a show about how to cure your sick pet. If your animal is sick, take it to the vet. Don't be a crazy person and use a podcast to cure your puking cat, dog, chinchilla, etc., etc. I think they would tell you the same thing. If they could. Which they can't. Which makes it hard. You know what's up. Take them to the vet. Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Cat Disgusted, a podcast for veterinary technicians and the people and animals who love them. Each episode, we explore the best of times and the worst of times in veterinary nursing. I'm your host, Nicole Dickerson. I'm an RBT and veterinary technician specialist in emergency and critical care, and this is what happens. Hello, darling. Welcome back to Cat Disgusted. I have positive news in the world of COVID-19. And I wanted to start the episode by talking about that because I think it's something that's important that we need to acknowledge. I want to congratulate all of the veterinarians and all of the veterinary technicians in California for becoming part of the group 1A, which means the first group of people in the state of California that are able to receive the COVID-19 vaccine. What? That's a big deal. It's a big deal. And I'll tell you why. I feel like veterinary technicians are not seen as health professionals. You know, our licenses come from the Department of Consumer Affairs in the state of California. They don't come from a health organization, like a health-based department. And we all thought we were going to be bottom of the list to get vaccinated because we're not really seen as a priority in terms of being counted as healthcare professionals. So the CVMA, which is the California Veterinary Medical Association, they really pushed the California state government to have veterinary technicians and veterinarians included in this first round of vaccines. I don't think that we talked about this the last time, but COVID-19 has opened the gates of hell in emergency departments of small animal medicine all across the country. There's a couple of theories as to why. It's been unrelentingly busy, and there's been unrelentingly long wait times for patients to be seen, unless you're actively dying. One theory is that, people are not traveling and they're not spending money on things that they normally would be spending money on. And they're so they've got more income to spend on their pet's healthcare. Another part of that theory is that, you know, they've got more time to sit at home staring at their pets. So, you know, has a cat always looked like that? Is the dog's coughing? Has the dog always been coughing? How long has the dog been coughing? So, you know, there's that element of it too. People have more time to sit in a parking lot with their animals and wait for veterinary care. A lot of the emergency departments in particular are feeling this because a lot of the general practices that these animals would normally be going to are no longer taking new clients. And they've pared down their services, they've pared down their staffing. And so people have no choice but to go to places where there are no appointments, where it's first come, first serve, and those are emergency departments. Now, speaking of emergency departments, I should describe a little bit how veterinary medicine is functioning these days in the world of masks and social distancing. So we no longer allow, very few places are allowing clients to come into the clinic. The only people that are in the clinic are the people that work there. And so what that means is when you come to emergency, you're going to drive your car into the parking lot. You're going to call the hospital front desk from your car. You'll get either a receptionist or more likely a veterinary technician that's going to come to your car and triage your animal in your car. Now, depending on what the problem is, there may be vital signs that that technician takes while in the car. But if it's a cat in a carrier, I mean, the animal's just basically going to have to go inside. The owner does not go inside. So then all communication happens by phone, and that can be the doctor, and that's going to be the receptionist, and that's going to be the technician, you know, doing all the things that we normally do in the sequence of events that happen when you come through emergency. I did your animal's exam. Here are the results of the exam. Here's a problem that I think is going on. Here's a cost estimate in order for us to figure out what's going on. And now, okay, now we know what's going on. Here's another cost estimate for treatment. All that's happening over the phone. So the reason why I say waiting in cars for all this time is because all of that process is taking a lot longer. And it also is compounded by the fact that the longer process is with more people. So it's hell on earth right now to go into a veterinary emergency clinic as a client, and it's hell on earth as a technician. And those technicians are the ones that are exposed to the public a gazillion times a day. You know, a busy night in the emergency department that I was working in with, you know, me, say two or three other technicians, one doctor. I mean, if we saw 20 things, we were moving. Like, that was a busy night, you know, 20 things within like, you know, 6 to 8 hours, something like that. They are routinely seeing twice that number. I was talking to a friend of mine in Washington. She said she saw 60 patients in a night shift. That's unreal. And all of those patients come in with humans that that technician is exposed to during triage. They're exposed to when they're taking estimates out there. If they're taking them out to the car, most likely they're not. They're probably on the phone. But guess what? All those technicians that are exposed to clients, they're all exposed to the clients they see. But then their whole other team, they're seeing other clients. And then all the veterinary technicians are all hanging out in the same hospital together. So God forbid one of them should have a direct exposure. They're going to expose everybody in the clinic. Anyway, I wanted to give you all a little bit of insight into how wonderful and deserved it is that veterinary technicians have moved up to the first tier of vaccination status in California. It's a big freaking deal. I received my vaccine. I received the Moderna vaccine, and that was 2 days ago. See, today's Sunday. I received it on Friday afternoon. The shot itself was pain-free. I mean, as much as it can be. I hate needles, so whatever. My arm has been sore for the last 2 days, but it's getting better. It is more sore than the flu shot. I haven't had my Tdap in like, I don't know, like long enough that I don't really remember if it was this sore. I feel like it's more localized. Like it's like where the needle went in. Like that's like the sore spot versus the Tdap one. I feel like kind of my whole upper arm was a little bit sore, but I've had no systemic feelings of illness at all. My understanding is the second round of vaccines can make you feel weird, and that's whether you get Pfizer or Moderna. So I'm kind of anticipating that a little bit. Because I got the Moderna one, mine is going to be like 3 to 4 weeks out as opposed to more like 2 weeks out if you got the Pfizer one. But I have to say, everyone's been having moments getting this vaccine as veterinary technicians. Like there's been a lot of posting about it on social media, which I'm all about because yes, normalize this. I am done living in this world. Let's normalize vaccination. Let's all get this shit taken care of now. So I love that. I knew that I too would probably have like a little moment in getting vaccinated. So they had converted a big conference room into a big vaccination station where I work now. And as I looked around the room, I see all these lab animal staff members. And the reason I know who they are is just, you know, we've got different colored scrubs for different things that happen. And so depending if you're like a nurse for humans or if you're a veterinary technician or like an occupational therapist or if you're, you know, like all those various things across the campus, they all have different colored scrubs. And I look up and I see like there's like 4 people in my color scrubs. And they're not necessarily people that I recognize. So I know that they've got to be from another part of campus and likely husbandry staff. Because I know all the veterinary technicians. And it felt so good to look around and see, like, you know what? you told us that we could get this vaccine. Well, here we are. Like, first in line, here we are. Stab us in the arm. Like, we are ready to get this done. And I felt proud because, you know, this is a big deal that we get to sit here and prevent disease. We are part of the solution. Also, the research that I work in, the research that these individuals work in, is the reason why this vaccine exists. And these are a lot of people, the husbandry staff, they are the blood in the veins of research. You can't do anything without these guys. They're the ones who are cleaning mouse cages. They're checking on the little mice to make sure that they're healthy. They're notifying the doctors and technicians if they see things that concern them. You can't do anything without these guys. And here they are getting vaccinated. Like, as soon as you told them that they could, the vaccine would not exist without these individuals involved. So I was so proud to be a part of the research community and a part of this community that is now getting vaccinated in the first rounds for COVID-19. Right? Feels good. Okay. So that was my, that's my positive update, which I was really excited to share. So, the second part of, this episode is more back to our standard cat disgusted fare. It's been a long time since we did a Stupid Breeds. And I thought it was high time that we did one. So, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce you to the stupid breed of hairless cats.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window?
I do hope that doggy's for sale.
I must take a trip to California.
Oh my God. Okay. So this is one of those things. I know that everybody who has listened, if you're listening to this show, it is almost 100% guaranteed that you have seen a hairless cat. So what we'll be doing here today is demystifying them a little bit and explaining why they look the way that they do, and why humans are responsible for that. So the breed, there's actually a couple different breeds of hairless cats, and they can look a little bit different depending on what they are. And the one that I want to focus on is called the Sphinx cat. Now, the Sphinx is the one that is the hairless, like the pinkies, the little pink wrinkly things that you see with the big bug eyes. That's the Sphinx breed. It's a naturally occurring gene mutation that causes this. And of course, selective breeding means that we're able to get that naturally occurring gene mutation to happen more often. Now, sometimes these cats will have like little fine hairs or little spots of hair. The skin is the same tone as the hair would be. So there is such a thing as like a black hairless cat that's got darker skin, or a tabby hairless cat that's got little stripes on it. Something to mention about the hairlessness of them that I always thought was so strange is that the normal body temperature for cats is higher than our own. Like, it really varies between like 100 and 102.5. That's their normal. So if you ever feel one of these hairless cats, it's the strangest thing. It's like you're holding a little like fuzzy hot water bottle because you're right up against their skin. So they feel really warm. Now, the crazies at the International Cat Association, they also note some breed definitions. There's a couple things that they want you to know. These guys have a kind of a wedge-shaped head, which I think is even more crazy looking because they don't have any like fur on their head. So it's just this little wedgy head. These big bug eyes. They've got big ears. They've got kind of a more barrel-chested look to them, and this pot-bellied abdomen. These are all desirable characteristics, by the way. So they basically look like Smeagol from The Hobbit. That's their desirable characteristics that we see. And all of those, of course, accentuated by the fact that they have no hair. They do have a bit of a dog-like behavior. At least that's what the International Cat Association would like you to know. I have to say, I haven't known a hairless cat personally, so I'm kind of neutral. I'm Switzerland when it comes to how their behavior is altered. But, you know, these little hairless hobbit monsters bouncing around and greeting you at the door. I mean, okay, that does sound kind of cute. I'll give them that. I will give them that. I enjoy the hairless cats in small animal medicine because you can see all of the veins, which is amazing for cat venipuncture when you're learning. Whenever there was a hairless cat, there was a pair of them that used to come to my first job. And whenever they would come in for their wellness checks and we had vet tech students that were there, I would always call them over because I'd be like, oh my God, look, you can see everything. Like, look, here's this like a lateral saphenous vein on a cat that sometimes you have to put a catheter into. Look, there it is. Or the elusive cat jugular. That's so hard to learn when you're first learning venipuncture in small animals. There it is. It just like pops right up. So, you know, they're fun for venipuncture anatomy. That's for sure. Especially when you're just learning on cats, because they can be so tricky. Now, I mentioned the selective breeding that we do. So all current sphinxes they're likely to be derived in one way or another from a couple cats in the 70s. Now, when I say couple cats, I'm talking like five. Like, remember the Pekingese? Remember when we talked about the Pekingese, how there was like, you know, like four Pekingese that every single Pekingese is derived from? Well, this is a similar situation. These guys originated from Minnesota and Canada. Not a big gene pool. I mean, this is lots of mothers and brothers screwing each other's cousins, you know, all that. So my personal favorite factoid from all of this actually is that two of these original cats were named Dermis and Epidermis. They were barn cats in Minnesota. I mean, you can't make that up. So these farmers in Minnesota, they would see that there were a couple of these hairless Smeagol kittens that would pop up in the barn cat population. And so what they did is they actually sold some of those hairless kittens to a breeder who then bred the kittens with their mothers and their cousins' mothers and mothers' kittens to give us these expensive and popular Sphinx cats. Now, let's talk about this gene and what this does. So what this gene does, it encodes for keratin. Now, keratin is what makes up our hair. It makes up our fingernails. The rhinoceros horn is made up of keratin. And mutations, they can occur at different alleles of the same gene. Y'all remember this? Those little genes, the little branches called the alleles. And so depending on where the mutation is, like different things will be expressed. And there's another breed that's called a Cornish Rex, and that guy, he's not completely hairless, but he's got the same kind of bug eyes and the wedge head, but he's got this this short curly hair all over their body. So that's a slightly different expression on the same gene, but it's a different place on the allele where the mutation occurs. Now, the Sphinx mutation, that leads to the hair follicle losing its ability to keratinize hair at all. So it means that hair could technically can form, but it's damaged, it's not right, and so it's lost right away. So that's why they don't have hair, but they sometimes have like a little bit of fuzziness to them. So they can grow it, it's damaged and it's not right, and they can't keratinize it to make it stay. So what would be the consequences of this, right? I mean, you know, hairless pink thing, sure. But the consequences of not being able to have keratin in your body. So anything that hair might distribute, so like, say, skin oils. Cats have very furry ears, so earwax, oils in their ears, all those things that hair naturally distributes away from the epidermis just builds up. And if you've treated hairless cats in the clinic, you know that they have the worst ears, like filthy, dirty, waxy, sticky chunks, gross ears. And it's because they don't have the hair that normally all that oil and dirt is distributed away from the skin, with. So that's a thing. Now, you have to, because of this, you have to bathe these cats to clear some of that skin oil, which is something that nature never intended humans to do with cats. We talked about your fingernails, right? So the nail beds of these cats can get filthy and infected. Their claws, they're flaky and they're fragile and they're gross. The skin folds that these cats have, I'm sure you've seen some internet meme pictures of overweight hairless cats with all their folds. Those skin folds, they get nasty. Like they have to get cleaned like a bulldog, you know, like in between those folds. That's a high maintenance situation that you have when you don't have the hair doing what it normally does on a normal animal. This is another, and you know, thank you for this wonder of human invention. Minnesota barn cat people. Now, they also don't have eyelashes, right? So they can have eye problems. Their eyes aren't protected like normal cats' eyes are. Something that I just learned, I didn't know about this, but you know, the kittens, they can have respiratory problems because, of course, another type of hair that you have in your body are cilia in your respiratory tract. And so if you've got damaged or inadequate cilia in your respiratory tract, you're not able to really kind of clear secretions, which contain things like bacteria and fungal spores and all that type of stuff that normally you can clear away. The kittens don't have that natural defense. And so they can get these respiratory tract infections that can really be a problem for them when they're young. Now, I stumbled down an internet rabbit hole of hairless cat grooming products. There are entire websites dedicated to this, like clothes, waterless cat bath spray. I found a book that was called Cat Grooming 101, authored by Furry Toe Beans. Furry Toe Beans has a registered trademark symbol by their name. So don't go biting off that Furry Toe Beans empire because it'll come and get you. I found shower caps that you can buy on Amazon, a set of 20 of those for your hairless cat bathing experiences. Oh, and you better believe Etsy has got a piece of this too, because I found an $82 hairless cat grooming kit on Etsy. Oh, conveniently offered in installments of payment if you didn't want to pay all $82 at once. So yes, that's out there. I do feel like I have to address this question that I'm sure some of you are wondering out there. You know, are hairless cats hypoallergenic? Like, I love kitties, but I'm really allergic to them. Oh my God, I'll get a hairless cat. That'll solve all the problems. Hell no. Hell no. That will not solve your problem. So the allergen that you're allergic to is in the skin oil. And we've already talked about how greased up these cats can get with their oil and their wax in their bits. It's not all right. You will not be allergy free because you bought a hairless cat. Might be worse, actually. And of course, like most inbred things that you're paying for, they have systemic problems. Because when you breed something so selectively for one particular trait, what you're not doing is breeding it for robustness, for health, for like all of the things that a diverse gene pool will provide you with. So these guys, they're prone to heart disease. There's neurological disorders that these cats will get. And it's all because they've narrowed the gene pool so much with all of the sex with the kittens having sex with their mothers and all that, that they're really prone to that type of thing. And I know it sounds really crass when you talk about like the kitten mother sex, but that's what you're spending your money on when you buy breeds. These cats are not inexpensive. In fact, I've seen, oh God, there was some celebrity who was on YouTube the other day and they had a munchkin hairless cat. Let's just think about how narrow that family tree has to be in order to have a munchkin hairless cat. Because, you know, the munchkins, those are those cats that have their really, really short front legs. So veterinary technicians, oh, they'll love you forever for that. Have them to put an IV catheter in a munchkin cat. Well, if it's a hairless one, maybe we'll be stoked because then we'll actually see the vein in there. But it's going to be the size of a little freaking tiny ass little worm. It's going to be nothing in that tiny leg. That's why they're so expensive. You know, they're so expensive because it takes a lot of work on the human's end to narrow the gene pool that much to have that mutation so specific. But it's also exactly that causes so many health problems. So this is my little PSA. Adopt a shelter cat. Don't spend the money on a hairless munchkin alien.
I go out, put my head, look at your tongue, turn bright red. No, I don't mind.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have survived another episode of Cat Disgusted. Veterinary technicians, veterinarians, know that I see you out there. I see you getting stabbed real good. More power to you. Here's to better times. Thank you for listening, everybody. COVID-19, bye-bye.
Inside that box, he's got radiation guns right at me. He's got no head. I need a real crew.